Hi, and welcome to session 3. This is How to Guide the First Session, Giving Feedback and Revising the First Draft. I'm Ethan Sawyer, the college essay guy, and I'm really, really glad you're here. So today is going to be an interesting day. Today we're going to be focused on what do you do in that first session when you meet with somebody? How do you help that person write? And the theme for today is going to be based on, well, you'll be able to figure it out from this image. The earth has music for those who listen. I love this image. Speaking of listening, here are the Japanese characters for to listen. Check this out. You've got the ear on the left side, you, eyes, undivided attention, heart. The combination of all those is to listen. And then this quotation that I really love from Alan Alda, of all people, listening is being able to be changed by the other person. Think about that for a second. I know that when I'm listening to somebody, or I'm hearing somebody, and I'm not really open to being changed by them. Like, I was listening to my friend today, but I was doing dishes, for example, this morning, and I was like, I'm not really listening to her. And then I actually stopped and went for a walk and listened to her, and it was a totally different experience. And this quotation really, for me, embodies or encapsulates that experience. So today the theme is listening. It's my core value. So in the session today, we're going to talk about getting acquainted. We're going to talk about some core counseling values, some things that are really important to me. But not just my core counseling values. These are like my life values. How to guide the first session. What do you do if somebody comes in with nothing? And what do you do if somebody comes in with something? And this is going to help, like, personal statement, yes, but just any time that you're brainstorming with somebody or you're helping someone else try and write something. And a lot of these exercises are things that you can do by yourself, but I find that it's really fun to do them with somebody else. And then, at the end, we're going to talk about how to revise a first draft in 5 steps. And that's pretty fun, too. So, for you students who are listening, and if you're a counselor listening, you know, everybody's going to be a counselor today. So I want you to kind of put the counselor hat on and think of this as being, you know, you're going to be a facilitator for somebody else. And these are, you know, a lot of techniques for how to help another person. Okay, beginning. So there's getting acquainted, and then there's getting real. And I'll be honest, I find it really boring to just small talk with somebody. And if you've worked with me, and some of you have, you probably saw that I was like getting deep pretty fast. And I think that getting acquainted and like chit chat is actually not very useful in a session. I think that it kind of is limited and it like we don't actually get anywhere very fast. So for me, it's like, let's get past the small talk and like let's get real. And one of the problems I think when we're first getting to know somebody is that we start with this question of how are you? And if you think about the question, how are you? Like, I think that's actually kind of a ridiculous question, because think about all the complexity of how you are at a particular moment. Like, how am I right now? Like, whoa. Like, there are like a billion things that come to mind. And so I find it to be impossible. And also, you know, because it's such an impossible question to answer, when someone asks me how I am, I'm usually like, fine, right? We go like, good, because we can't possibly, you know, encapsulate all of our feelings in one thing. So we resort to these like, kind of like, you know, socially acceptable norms. And I don't prefer that. So what I'm offering today is 4 conversation starters that are better than how are you. And in the spirit of, you know, these are great for an opening a session, like when you're working with somebody on a college essay, but I actually think these are just great for life. So these are things that I do with my friends and like my wife, ways of like just connecting better. So here's the first one. It's called celebrations. And the way it works is this. So with celebrations, this is a game that my wife and I play, and we actually played it at dinner this week. And it goes something like this. So let's say we're just sitting at dinner, you know, rather than be like, how was your day? You know, I might say something like, so what are you celebrating today? And she might say something like, well, I'm celebrating that I have, you know, a new client. And because my wife is a counselor as well. And I'll be like, that's awesome. And I'll like give her a high five. And then she'll say, what are you celebrating? And I'll be like, I'm celebrating that I'm trying to think of something. What am I celebrating? Oh, I finished my MBTI certification this week, my Myers-Briggs certification. And she'll be like, that's great. And then she'll go. And then we'll go back and forth for as long as we want. And what happens for me when I'm celebrating myself is that it feels just really good. It's kind of like, what way would you like to be affirmed? And then you get to just affirm yourself. And then the other person gets to do the same thing. So I recommend doing this with your friends, especially when somebody's feeling down. Just ask them, so what are you celebrating? And it's like, what? You know, you might get like a weird look at first, but shifting that perspective to thinking about what do I have to, it's kind of like being grateful for, but it's more like, where were you a rock star? Like, what have you done that's awesome lately? And taking turns is really nice, and just listening to each other. So a couple tips as you're doing celebrations, try not to think ahead about what your celebration is going to be while the other person's talking. Try to just really listen to that person and to, like that quote said at the beginning, try to let yourself be changed. And tiny affirmations, like saying at the end, like, that's really great, you know, or wow, you know, just affirming the other person, I find can be really useful because it says to the other person, like, I hear you and I see you and I recognize that that's really cool. And if you've ever, if you're playing this with somebody for the first time, I recommend going first, like doing it so that they actually know what you're talking about. Cause they might be like, wait, what is this? And the other version you can do, if someone particularly is having trouble celebrating themselves, you know, sometimes, you know, I meet people who are like, oh, I'm nothing. Everything's stupid, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, well, can we celebrate each other? Cause sometimes it's a lot easier for somebody to celebrate somebody else first. So I'll be like, you know, I want to celebrate you for, you know, I'm thinking about my wife. Like, I want to celebrate you for just really taking care of yourself and being really healthy and you know, just resting when you need to rest. That's something. And so you can celebrate each other. So that's really a fun way to do that. So another game I play, which if some of you on this who are listening right now have played this with me, is If You Really Knew Me. And this is another taking turns game where you begin with the phrase, if you really knew me, and then you just, you know, finish the sentence. So if you really knew me, Ethan, you would know that my dream growing up was to play basketball in the NBA. That was totally my kid dream. Or if you really knew me, you would know that nothing gets me angrier than when men are abusive or violent towards women in their speech, in their actions. You know, that just really gets at me. So what I encourage you if this game, if you really knew me, is to like go deeper, go to find something that actually is revealing something about yourself rather than just sort of like, if you really knew me, you'd know that like, I like dogs, you know, or like I watch the show Dexter, you know, that's not if you really knew me. So I encourage you to emphasize the really there. And again, try not to, so just a couple quick tips, try not to think about the celebration, or sorry, try not to think about your if you really knew me ahead of time, just listen to the other person. You don't need to affirm the other person and be like, wow, that was really great. You know, you can just listen. If you've played before, do it first so that the person knows what's going on. And yeah, really emphasize the really, like try to go deep with the person. So a third one that I love to do is a gratitude exchange. And this came from my friend Greg and I just going for walks together. And we would just go for a walk and we would, you know, talk to each other. And we hit on this idea of like, well, what are you grateful for? And so we would just go back and forth saying things that we were grateful for. Really simple, but really profound. You know, one time we were playing and I was like, so what are you grateful for? And he's like, I'm grateful that I have two legs to walk on. Because he's been dealing with this thing called plantar fasciitis or fast something. Anyway, it basically makes it hard for him to walk. So he was like, I'm really grateful that I can walk on my legs right now. And I was like, oh, wow, I'm grateful for that too. And then he was like, what are you grateful for? And I was like, I'm really grateful. And I just like looked around at the weather and I was like, I'm really grateful that it's always 70 degrees and clear in Los Angeles. And he's like, yeah. And then he was like, I'm grateful that I got to write my journal this morning. And so what this does is magic. It's just recognizing what are the things in our lives that we have to be grateful for. And, you know, this can be a writing exercise, you know, and you don't have to like go for a walk when you do this with somebody. You can totally do this in a room. But like I said, it's a great way to get in with somebody deep quickly. That's what these three exercises are meant for. If these feel kind of like too vulnerable or too, oh, they're going to look at me weird, then I find starting with somebody with just a basic check-in is really useful. And what do I mean by check-in? I just mean like a chance for each of you to say, what's up for you right then and there? So, you know, one of the questions that I'll ask for a check-in is like, what's present for you right now? And just listen to that phrasing. I know it sounds maybe a little unusual, but think about that. What's present for you right now? It's an opportunity to check in with your feelings, with your body, like, how am I feeling right now? And, you know, I find that just being asked that allows me to kind of stop, you know, the jumping around of my mind and just think about where I'm at and how I'm feeling, and allows me to get present. Another way that I'll ask a check-in is like, is there anything that you need to say to help you be more present right now? And someone might be like, what? And what I mean by that is, like, sometimes we've got some things on our mind that are, like, in the back of our minds. Like, I've had students before in check-ins say, like, you know, yeah, I'm sorry, I'm really distracted right now because my best friend just sent me this text, and it's really, really making me mad, and I'm sorry. And I'll be like, no, let's talk about it for a second. So we'll actually talk about it. And I find that just checking in allows the opportunity for both of us to just speak what's on our minds and what's distracting us. And oftentimes the experience that I have in doing that is that the thing, whatever is present for us or distracting, is like it, like that the distracting thought like dissolves because we've had a chance to like just put it out there. And it could be that in a check-in somebody just says like, you know, I'm good, I'm fine, and that's fine. So it's not like it has to be this like deep emotional thing. It's just an opportunity to like, you know, check in. So if you're thinking, this is feeling kind of touchy-feely, Ethan, I believe that this work that we're doing on personal statements, and I believe that connecting with my friends and with my wife and the most important people in my life is touchy-feely. And I believe that it's touchy-feely work that we're doing. So if it feels touchy-feely, I totally respect that. But get ready, it's about to get a little more touchy-feely. And then we're going to move into some more of like techniques and strategies. Because I focused last session on more techniques and strategies, and I really wanted to give you some like core principles and core values that are important to me. So yeah, we're going to get a little more touchy-feely before we get strategic. So bear with me. Here are some counseling values that are super important to me in my life and that have really changed my life. And I encourage you to think about what are your personal, you know, when I say counseling values, like what do you bring into a relationship with somebody? And think about that a second. Like, I'm not just generally asking that question just to like fill space. Like, I want you to think about that. What do you bring to a relationship? And values can be things that you feel like, okay, I've nailed it, I've got this, or things that you feel like you're reaching for. You know, let's talk about like honesty for a second. Like, honesty could be something that you feel like, oh yeah, I'm totally honest. Or you could feel like, you know what, I'm not totally honest, but I want to be really honest. So that could totally be a core value for you. So one of the exercises, we're not going to do it today, but is to just articulate your core values. And that's what I did on this, and that's how this part of the session came about. So here are my core counseling values. And the first one is something that I've already mentioned twice, and it's listening. And there's this awesome quote by David Augsburg. He says, being listened to is so close to being loved that most people can't tell the difference. Take that in a second. Because it feels like when I'm listening to, well, let me just say how it feels when I'm being listened to. When I feel like I'm being listened to and the person is just quiet and is just like really allowing themselves to be changed by me and like taking in what I'm saying, it feels like love. It feels like, oh, like I'm totally, you know, being witnessed and being seen. And so that's a value that I try and bring into my sessions, you know, with you. I try and bring it into my interactions with my friends, my family. It's harder with family sometimes, but, you know, I really believe in just listening. And one of the phrases that I like is a friend of mine once called it musical listening. And musical listening, I love this phrase because it's like you're listening to not just the melody of what somebody's saying, but you're listening to like the harmonies, and you're listening to like, you know, their body language and all the complexities, and you're reading into it, and it's like a symphony. You know, it's like this taking in someone's whole self. And also you're listening to what's not being said, right? You're listening to what's happening in the silences with them. So listening is my first core counseling value. And here's a quick, just, you may have seen this graph before, but, you know, in terms of active listening, which is also called mirroring, you know, you can do this on one level, on a basic level, where you're just repeating what somebody says. So if you look in the top level, top left corner, it says repeating. So that involves like perceiving what someone's saying and paying attention to what they're saying, remembering what they're saying, and then repeating the message using the exact same words. So you could say, you know, if someone says something, you go, okay, cool, what I heard you say was, and you just repeat it back to them. And that can feel kind of robotic, so I don't recommend that, doing that with somebody. Another option is to paraphrase. So same first steps, perceiving what the person is saying, paying attention to what they're saying, remembering it, thinking and reasoning, like thinking about what they're saying and processing a little bit, and then giving the message back using similar words, but kind of, you know, and, you know, rearranging it just a little bit. Okay, so that's called paraphrasing, right? And then there's like this third level, which is like what's often called active listening or mirroring. And it's reflecting back. So you perceive it, you pay attention to what they're saying, remember it, think and reason, and then you like let it marinate in you a little bit, and then you use your own words. And I find that the process, this is a simple process, and it's something that if you've worked with me before, you probably have heard me do, you probably hear me say something like, okay, so what I'm hearing you say is, and I'm just mirroring back what I've heard in my own words. But the reason I do that is because when somebody does that to me, I find that it's like just awesome. Like it feels like, wow, this person is really getting me. Or alternately, if I say to someone, what I'm hearing you say is this, and the person goes, kind of, not really, it's more like this, then that allows me to like adjust my thinking and to like take in and to really get clear on what that person's saying. Also, sometimes when I say something to someone and someone mirrors me, they reflect back what they heard me say. There's something that happens sometimes when I hear someone else say my words where I'm like, oh, wow, that sounds really... blank. It sounds really weird, or that sounds really like judgmental of me, or that sounds really good. That sounds really awesome, actually. So just having somebody say back to me what I just said allows me to hear it in a different way. So I recommend trying this basic exercise. Try and sneak it in your first session this week if you're meeting with your partner for the first time. When you're listening to that person, I know it's going to sound kind of, you know, seem kind of, you know, arbitrary. Or try it with a friend this week, you know, just in while they're talking, say, okay, what I hear you saying is this, and just say it back to them. And just see what happens. Just experiment with that. Okay, so that's listening. My other core counseling value, another one, is unconditional positive regard. And this is a phrase that was popularized by Carl Rogers. And it basically just means, if you think about the words unconditional positive regard, it's a little bit, it just means basically accepting somebody and supporting them regardless of what that person says or does. And it doesn't mean you have to agree with what that person says or does, but it's just accepting that person and recognizing that you know, that they're there in front of you, and that you're sharing in this moment with them. And I find that when someone's sharing their deepest truth, if I just accept them with this positive regard, and it's not quite like love, because love is sometimes kind of mixed up in like, well, I can't love everybody, you know, sometimes we have, but it's just accepting somebody and wanting the best for them. I think that's probably the best way to put it, is like just really wanting the best for the person in front of you. Another one, I think I mentioned this one last week, is accurate empathy. So sometimes when someone says something to me, it can be tempting to go, oh, like for example, let's say I a few years ago, if I'd had a student say to me, like, I just broke up with my boyfriend, you know, I might have been more apt to be like, oh, that's so sad, I'm so sorry. But actually, you know, a student could like be like super happy about that because it was like a really terrible relationship or it was like just destined to end. And so instead of assuming, you know, what the feeling is around that, like saying, oh, that's really sad, now I'm more apt to ask something like, oh, you know, to say, so what I hear you say is like you broke up, so how is that going for you? And actually ask the person that I'm talking to go deeper, rather than assuming, oh, I know how that feels, or I know how this person feels about that. Because how I feel and how the person feels in front of me could be totally different. And I want to be accurate with my empathy so that I'm not projecting my own feelings onto their experience. The next one of my core values is yes and. And this is a principle that comes from improv comedy. So, you know, in high school and in college, I would do a lot of improv. And in improv, when someone, say you're in a scene with a partner and they make a suggestion, one of the core values of improv is to yes and rather than no. So if we're like on stage together and the person's like, oh, this is interesting being at the beach, then the scene is going to go a lot better if I'm like, yeah, and look at all these giant waves coming, you know, as opposed to if the person says, wow, it's really cool being at the beach, and I say, we're not at the beach. It's like crickets. It's like suddenly the scene dies, and the person's like, oh, okay, where are we? And then I say, no, we're in the forest. And then the person says, no, we're not in the forest. It's like, okay, where? So it kind of kills the scene. So for me, for brainstorming, whenever we're in the process of like coming up with creative ideas, and you've probably felt this before too, when you're trying to come up with new and fresh ideas, if somebody shuts you down and says like, oh, that's a crappy idea, It's like, okay, what's your idea? You know, I find that it can be totally, can totally stop a process. So one of the rules or one of the values that I try to keep for myself is yes and. You know, let's keep opening the doors. Let's put all the ideas down before we start deciding which are the best ideas. So, yes and. Another one is student-centered counseling. And if you're a student listening to this, think about the other person-centered counseling. So sometimes when we're, you know, working with someone to help them write something or even just working through a problem, sometimes we get this idea, or I'll just speak for myself. I get this idea in my head of like, ooh, I have this really great idea of how this could go. Like, ooh, the essay could be like this. And I have to remind myself, the image that I use in my head is like driver's ed. And I have to remind myself that whoever's writing the essay or whoever I'm talking to who's like trying to work through a particular problem, that they're in the driver's seat. And I'm sitting in the passenger seat, and in like, I don't know if you've seen the driver's ed cars, but it's like the person who's driving has a steering wheel and a, you know, brake and an acceleration pedal and, you know, a gear shift, all that. I too have a steering wheel and I have a brake. And I can use those if I need to, but really I shouldn't be the one driving the car. Like, it should be the other person driving the car. And I have to constantly remind myself of this because I'll get these great ideas in my head, especially when I'm, like, you know, trying to counsel a friend, you know. And by counsel, I just mean, like, help a friend through a problem. Like, I'll be like, ooh, here's what you should do. And I'll totally try to, like, take the steering wheel and be like, let's go this way. And sometimes, now, there are sometimes times when that's a good idea. But I find that in general, especially when I'm, you know, first getting to know somebody and first kind of, like, I need to take in more information. And I try and set the goal for myself to let the other person do the driving. So I call that student-centered counseling or, you know, author-centered counseling. Like, let the author be the author. Another rule for my counseling and also for my life is taking risks. And there's this awesome quotation that goes, if you're bored, it's because you're not taking enough risks. So think about that a second. That's exciting just to hear me, just to like hear that out loud. If you're bored, it's because you're not taking enough risks. So I want, just think about that for your life for a second. Like, if you're bored in class, if you're bored with a subject that you're working on, if you're bored listening to a friend, like, take a risk, try something. And so when you're working with somebody on a personal statement, or when you're working with somebody just, you know, going through some issues, try stuff, you know, be inventive, take risks, put yourself out there. Life is short. Go for it. So the last one of my core counseling values is silence. And there's this awesome quotation that the word listen contains the same letters as the word silent. So one of the things I really believe is that when I'm working with somebody, whether it's my friend is trying to process through a problem, like I said, or a student working through an essay, like, just me shutting up and listening and just being silent is great. And if the person goes silent for a while, like, I don't actually need to fill that with silence. Or sorry, I don't need to fill that with words. Because sometimes people just need to, like, be silent. And I'm sure you know this. You know, sometimes that's exactly what someone needs. There's a quote that I love. I know I'm speaking a lot. I should be, like, leaving more silence in this. But there's this quotation I love that the being is the doing. So just being with somebody when they're processing something is actually doing something. Okay. So here's how to work with somebody who comes in with nothing. So if we're starting from scratch, so let's say you're working with your partner this week, or, you know, you're trying to, you know, the person comes in and just that, if you're working with somebody this week and the person has absolutely nothing and they're like, oh, I don't know. Here are some ideas of some things you can do. So before we get to that, I want to give you this list of things that students should probably write about on their essays. So, and this goes for you too, or, you know, you students who are wearing the counselor hat, like, this is absolutely for you too. And this is from a list that was created with a friend of mine who's a UC reader. So he reads for UC Berkeley. And he made this big list, and we made this list together of things that students should definitely write about. So here we go. So any physical or learning disabilities, and not something that's like, you know, oh, I broke my arm, but like something that's been diagnosed by a health professional, you know, in an official way that you could document. Specify what and how long. Like, that should definitely end up in an essay. And it doesn't have to be the whole essay. Like, if you have ADHD, you know, it doesn't mean that your whole essay has to be about having ADHD. But just mentioning that, especially if it's had an impact on your high school, on your grades, or just your development, you know, get that stuff in there. Any potential red flags on the application, in other words, anything that the reader might look at your application and go, this is what's going on there? Like, why did you get that C in, you know, physics? You know, anything that's low grades, any classes or activities that you dropped, if you took swimming for a year and then you dropped it, like, that should be mentioned. Not in your, it doesn't have to be in your main essay. You know, you can totally mention that in your, one of your supplemental essays in the additional info section. If you switch schools a couple times, you know, just getting in information about why all the school changes, that's something else that can end up in your additional info statement if it doesn't end up in your main essay. If you come from a single parent household, that's something maybe worth mentioning, especially if that's had some kind of impact on your life, and I imagine that that has. Any, if you worked in high school, particularly if you helped pay bills for your family, that's something that's a great something to put in a, you know, topic or element to put in your essay. If you've been an amazing, you know, something extracurricular that's been awesome, especially on the state or national level, you know, definitely have, that's usually good for the UC2 essay, or for your, you have a, usually an extracurricular essay, supplemental essay for, you know, for a bunch of schools. If you've been involved in research projects, particularly if you had something published, you know, you got involved with a, you know, with some kind of, you know, research group at UCLA or something, and you had that published, like, definitely mention that in your application. If you come from a low-income family or a big family with many dependents, in other words, like, you live with your grandparents, or, you know, there are lots of people strained, you know, by one income, that should be in there. If you're first generation, you'll be the first generation in your family to attend college. If your parents are disabled or were disabled or unemployed for a while, you know, what was it? What happened? How long? And if you speak a language at home other than English, like, that's interesting. Or if any, you know, part of your high school career was outside the U.S., that'll be on your application somewhere. But these are great things to think about for your application in general. So, okay. If none of these things are true for you, and you know the person that you're working with is coming in with nothing, here are some things that you can do in the first half hour of the session. Now, I'm assuming that the session's going to last for an hour, so here are some things you can do in the first half. And I want, the first thing I put here is improvise, because I want to encourage you to just make it up and not to come in with, like, this preconceived notion of, like, okay, we're going to do this and this and this and this, because for somebody else, that could feel really confining. Like, what do you get this programmed idea? Like, that might be fun for some people, but I want to give you some ideas. But really, I want you to, like, make it up and, like, have fun and do what's interesting to you. So some of the ideas, you know, that I talked about above, the getting real games, like celebrations, if you really knew me, gratitude, those are ideas. So you could try those in the first half hour just to get to know each other and connect. You could look at the essence object exercise or the values exercise. You know, that's a really efficient way. Just having somebody talk through those can be a really great way to get to know somebody. And again, as a side note, like, just do that with your friends. I've done that before with, like, a group of friends that came over, and we just did five essence objects and explained what they meant to us, and it was awesome. From session two, I talked about creating a timeline, a 21 details list, a stuff you should know about me list. Like, these are ideas I know that I've already talked about, but I just want to remind you that these are things that you can do in the first session, especially if the person that you're working with hasn't done those already. Ask lots of questions. What was the toughest thing you've ever had to deal with? Or what makes you feel safe? Be creative. Get curious. Be spontaneous with whatever questions you want to ask. What are you interested in? If you can't think of any good questions, I created this list. If you just Google the College Essay Guy's 100 Brave and Interesting Questions, I came up with my friends with a big list of, like, great questions. So I encourage you to take a look at that list. It's a fun list. So once you get to the halfway point, I think it's good to just check in and to say, so how's it going? And you can actually ask the person this question. You can be like, so how are we doing so far? And I know that sounds really kind of cheesy. I'm like, I'm not going to say that to somebody, but I find that it's a really good and productive question, because it allows both of you to be like, all right, we're at the halfway point. We've got half an hour left. Like, where are we at? And if it's going really well, maybe you just want to keep doing what you're doing. So maybe you're, like, riffing on something and you've been asking interesting questions, and the person is like, you know, flowing on this story about something, or maybe there's, like, something particular that you want to go back to. It's like, you know, that thing you said about your dad, like, that was really interesting to me. I want to go back and, like, talk about that some more. So that's some version of, like, keep doing what you're doing. So keep asking questions. Or you can do something completely different. But I like checking in halfway, because it allows you to sort of go, okay, maybe it's like, this isn't working. Like, we're not getting anywhere. Let's try something different. And sometimes I'll say to someone I'm working with, I'll be like, so I feel like this isn't really working. Do you feel that way too? And the person will be like, yeah, I'm not really feeling this. And it's like, oh, great. So we're, like, connected there. We're, like, on the same page. And sometimes I'll, like, come up with an idea, but sometimes I'll say, like, so what do you want to do? Like, what would be fun? And I'll like invite the other person to get creative with me for a second. And it might feel like if you're the counselor and you're in the counselor role that you have to like run the whole session and have all the good ideas, but it's totally not true. It should feel like this mutual exchange back and forth, right? So you can ask, so what do you want to do? Like, what would be fun? And just invite, open up a brainstorming conversation about like, okay, what should we try? And make it playful. Like, you don't have to have all the answers. Or if you're really stuck and you're like, I really want to get something done and I want to make sure we have an outline, you can do the type B brainstorm. So this is something that I'll do with my students if I'm like, I'm not sure what to do, but this is always, for me, it's guaranteed to generate some good material. And what just to remind you what the type B brainstorm is, you can just Google college essay guide, you know, type B essay, and you'll see the brainstorm. But it's basically like for students who know what they want to do, just brainstorm what are the values that would lead you to that career, and then how have you developed these values in your life? And you know, that creates an outline right there, so you could just do that together. If you're a type D student and you have no idea what you want to study and you don't have any challenges, then just make a list of your top values, or have the person you're working with make a list of the top values, and then talk about how each of those was developed. And that's a totally legit way of like coming up with an outline. Okay, so once you've done that and you've got your kind of nearing the end of the session, so you're at like the 50 to 55 minute mark, I find that it's good to check in and just ask the person literally some version of, so how was this for you? How did this go for you? And to just get some feedback. And I find that sometimes we're like a little bit self-conscious and like we don't want to ask because we don't want to hear them say like this was terrible. But I think that, you know, if I can get past that worry about like the person saying something that I don't want to hear, like it's actually really useful, you know, so the person can tell me this was really good that you did, but this other thing was like not very interesting. And I can like agree or disagree with that, right? One of the things you can do at the end is you can track the session. And sometimes I'll do this when I'm working with somebody, is I'll actually go, okay, so in the first part of the session we talked about this, and then the second part we did this. And so tracking it just means kind of like thinking about the bullet points of, oh, then we talked about your dad and that was interesting. And then we totally switched and we played this game of like we decided to thumb wrestle. And then the thumb wrestling made you remember when you were a kid and this other thing happened. You know, so just tracking it allows you to like remember what you just talked about. And what I find, why I think that's useful, is because it allows you together to come up with some next steps. Because I think that it's really important at the end of the session to have a really clear idea of what the action item is. So I call them action items. It's, you know, it's action items and a deadline. So it might sound something like, okay, so what are we going to do next? Okay, well, we let's say we brainstormed this type B, you know, essay outline. So the action item, and you totally got to give the other person a homework assignment. You say, I want you to write a first draft of that outline, and I want you to give it to me by when? And I like to actually ask the other person to tell me when they're going to give it to me by, because having somebody else set their own deadline, I think is a lot more, you get a lot more buy-in. And I can see it happen, like some of you on this call have done this too. I'll be like, so when are you going to send it to me by? And there's like something that shifts, because the person actually has to go, oh shoot, I have to actually think about my week coming up and like what I've got going on. And sometimes people will be like, I'm going to send it to you by Tuesday, like 9 p.m. You know, and I'll actually ask what time. So ask the person not just what day, but what time. And then email the deadline right then and there so you don't forget. So it's like, you know. And I find that having a deadline set that the other person has set is like, I'm like 200 or 300% more likely to actually get something back than if I'm like, okay, well, send me something. If I leave it super open and vague, like send me something, and I don't say by when, then oftentimes the person is not likely to send me something. So have the other person set the deadline and then set the time, and then email that person or have that person email themselves right away. Okay, sip of water. So how do you work with somebody who comes in with something? Like, what do you do? Here are some thoughts. So a lot of times when students come in with a first draft, they think, and some of you again on this call have thought, oh, we're going to read this essay. And actually, I think there are so many interesting things that we can do with an essay rather than just like me sitting there reading it. And one of my favorite things to do and with students is to say, well, tell me your essay. And sometimes my student will be like, what? What do you mean tell me your essay? And I'll be like, yeah, literally, like, and I'll take the essay and I'll like turn it over and I'll put it face down and I'll be like, just tell me the essay. Like, tell me what you wrote. And the person will be like, oh, okay. Well, and they'll have to like think about it, and then they'll tell me the essay. And what I'll do is I'll just like take out a pen and paper, or I'll, you know, open up my computer and I'll say, I'm just going to take notes. And I'll just take notes of what the person tells me. And I'll kind of bullet point the story points. And this will take, you know, however long it takes. Sometimes it takes 2 minutes, sometimes it takes 10 minutes. And sometimes you'll hear someone going like, oh, okay, this wasn't in the essay, but, and just to fill in the pieces, they'll like give me some other piece of the story. And this is an awesome, awesome, awesome exercise. And there are a few reasons why I think this is an awesome exercise. First of all, when you hear something, it's totally different from reading it. Chekhov, Anton Chekhov, who was a playwright, a Russian playwright, and a short story writer, he used to always read his stuff aloud with his wife because he knew just based on that whether or not it was going to work or not, just hearing it aloud. So I encourage you, actually, not just when you're with somebody else, but like when you finish writing something, read it aloud and see how it goes and see how it flows, because you're going to hear it in a different way. So, you know, having someone like actually try and tell the story is awesomely great. It's also an extremely efficient way to find out if the story works or not. Are there any gaps in the story? You know, and so, like I said, sometimes the person telling me the story is going to like actually fill in those gaps. Also, I think that this is a great way to get some, to like trick somebody into writing a second draft. Because what's happening, think about it, is the person's already written a draft and they've kind of told the story in writing. But then when you ask them like, okay, so tell me your story, then they have to think about what they wrote and they have to write a second draft live right then and there in front of you. And the person isn't pressured by that. It tends to be like, okay, well, how do I tell this in the best way? They're retelling it in a new way, and you're taking notes, and that, and those notes are going to be the outline for the second draft. So it's a really cool way of like redoing it right then and there. Because oftentimes, as you'll see in a minute, the thing that someone comes in with is going to totally change. The first draft is going to like change a ton. And this is a great way of like, you know, showing the person that actually the way you told it the second time was better than the first time. And like I said, those things we forget are sometimes like crucial things. The third reason is that I think that it's a chance to ask, and what I wrote here is that, is this the right clay? And by that I mean, there's this metaphor that I use. Like sometimes when a student comes in, they're thinking about like certain details, or like, you know, I'll ask them like, what do you think about it? And they'll like focus on like a particular word or a particular phrasing. And they're focused on like the details of it, when really we need to be focusing on not like the details of like, if we're molding something in clay, like not did the rim of the cup, like should it be curved this way or that way, but really like zoom back and are we actually molding with the right clay at all? Or should we be totally using some different clay? So I love this analogy, this metaphor of like molding with the right clay. And oftentimes, so check this out. Imagine that you're with somebody and you say, tell me your story. And they tell the story and I hear it and I'm kind of like, you know, sometimes I'll ask them, be like, so does that feel like the main story you want to tell? Like, is this your deepest story? I love asking that question. Is this the deepest story you want to tell? And oftentimes after a student has finished telling and I'll ask them that, they'll be like, no, not really. It's kind of, I feel like a lot of times they'll get real with me and they'll be like, no, I kind of BS'd it. And I'm like, okay, well, so let's put that aside for a second. And just hearing that, we were able to find out in just like 3 minutes or 5 minutes if this is not actually the story they want to tell. And then we go back to, you know, square one, which is like the, what do we want to do? You know, coming in with nothing, starting from scratch. And by the way, starting from scratch, you know, if I'm working with somebody, can feel, I used to be like, oh my gosh. But now I'm like, this is awesome. So we get to like start over and we get to do that live together. So if somebody like, if what they bring in, you feel like this is not your best stuff, and you don't have to say that to them. But if you feel that way, you can actually ask them, does this feel like it? You know, some version of like, is this the one you want to tell? Because you get like 5 minutes, right? Like with an admissions officer, you've got like 3 to 5 minutes of their attention. Is this what you want to do with that time? And sometimes with the first draft, it's like, no, really it's not. And I just don't know what it is yet. And that's fine. Then we get to like, rather than trying to like tweak this thing that's kind of like, like not very strong, we get to like very quickly be like, you know what, this is not it. Let's find something else. And let's hopefully in this session, like find the right clay. So that's one thing that I really love to do. Another thing, rather than having a student tell me the essay, is to read the essay aloud. And some of you, again, on this call have had me do that with you. So here's what that's like. So what I'll say to a student is, okay, awesome. Thanks for the draft. So I'm going to read this aloud with you. And a lot of times, sometimes I'll get like a weird look, like, oh, and I'll get like all these qualifiers, like, oh, it's not very good, or I didn't really finish it yet, or the ending is bad, or, and I'll just listen and like wait, because, you know, I want them to be able to just get it all out, and I'll be like, anything else? Anything else you want to say? And, you know, the person will say everything, and then I'll be like, okay. So, and here are some things that I say to try and, you know, let somebody like feel a little more comfortable with it. With me reading the essay, the first draft aloud, is I'll say things like, you know, don't worry, this doesn't have to be, this is just a first draft. This is like the before shot. And if you think of like a diet picture, there's like before and after, and this is the before shot. So this doesn't have to be awesome right now. Another thing that I'll say is I'll encourage the person I'm working with to listen from the admissions officer's perspective. So I'll say, like, don't listen to it as you are, but like, imagine somebody is sitting across the desk and has received this college essay. And listen from that perspective. And in particular, I'll give the person I'm working with something really particular to think about. I'll say, listen from the admissions officer perspective and listen for, did this essay answer the prompt? So listen really carefully to how I'm phrasing that. Did the essay answer the prompt? Notice I'm not saying, did you answer the prompt? And I'm not saying, did the student answer the prompt? I'm saying, did the essay? Because what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to create this little bit of objectivity. So to look at the essay as something separate from the writer. Now, that might sound a little confusing. Let me try and specify what I mean by that. So sometimes as a writer, what I write feels really closely connected to me, and I feel like if somebody insults it, like, I'm broken because they're insulting me personally. And so when I say to somebody, think about the essay, I'm trying to say, this is just something you did. It's not who you are. So that when we're discussing the essay, we're discussing this act, this creation that happened in the past, and that is not, you know, it's not, I'm trying to make it not personal, right? Now, obviously it's a personal statement, but I'm trying to like invite some level of distance from the writing so that we can critique it from an objective perspective. So, as we read it aloud, I'll say, so listen from the admissions listen from the perspective of an admissions officer for, did the essay answer the question? You feel how that's different? So, once we finish reading the essay aloud, like, I'll sit there and I'll just like read it, you know. Okay, so I'll read the prompt first. You know, oftentimes it's, describe the world you come from and tell us how your world has shaped your dreams and aspirations. Now, does the essay answer the prompt? And then I'll begin reading. So I'll read the essay aloud and I'll take my time and just let the student listen. And then when I get to the end, you might think, well, then you tell them what you think, right? I don't yet. I do something different. I ask three questions. And here are the three questions. Oh, sorry. Let me just give you the three questions first. So before I move to that. So the three questions I ask are this. Number one, did the essay answer the prompt? So like think about that. Like, let's say we've just finished reading your essay and I'm like, did the essay answer the prompt? And the person will have a feeling with that, yes or no. And I'm encouraging you to ask this of the person that you're working with. Okay. So then question two is, what did you like about the essay? So I'm asking for like, you know, positive feedback for the self. And sometimes the person will give it in the third person, like, oh, I thought this part was cool and this part was cool, rather than like, oh, I thought I did this well. Like, so they're kind of getting objective, which is good. And then I'll ask, well, what did you not like? Or what do you think needs work? Or I'll ask, what questions do you have about the essay? So those three questions. Did the essay answer the prompt? What do you like about it? And what do you think needs work? And I'll just make a list of pros and cons. So I actually just bullet point the list. Of, you know, what does the other person think? What does the student think? So I'm making this list. Okay. Now, why am I doing this? So here are three reasons why I'm doing this. Oh, sorry. I'm skipping ahead. Ba-dum, ba-dum, ba-dum. Oh, I did put these questions up. My bad. So does the essay answer the prompt? What do you like about the essay and what do you think needs work? Okay. Oh, sorry. I'm jumping around a little bit. But if you read the essay and you feel like it's not really revealing too much about the student, like if you feel like it's like, you know, I'm not really getting you in this essay, you can ask, ask this of the person that you're working with, what do you learn about the author from this essay? So, you know, sometimes you'll have essays, for example, that are, you know, the focus or the foci doesn't reveal very much. So, for example, you know, you'll have a student write something, like the essay begins like, basketball is a sport that was invented in 1891 by Dr. James Naismith in Springfield, Massachusetts. And it's like very history focused. sometimes essays end up being more about history and, you know, something kind of has unrelated to the student, right? Or sometimes an essay will begin with something like, my grandfather came to this country with $20 in his pocket and dreamed to make a better life for himself and his family. He worked in a factory, you know, and it totally ends up being about this really awesome essay about the student's grandfather. And I'm like, wow, your grandfather sounds awesome. And I have no idea who you are, you know, but you have this awesome grandfather. So, pay attention to that. And oftentimes, you'll have somebody write about an abstract idea like, many people believe that intelligence is ineffable and that attempts to describe it are futile. But I'd like, you know, but here's my attempt. I'm just marking that I spelled that wrong. I'm going to correct that. So, but here's my attempt. And the student will go off on this totally abstract tangential essay, which is like really kind of floaty out there. And I'll get to the end of it and I'll be like, cool, so you have these interesting ideas, but again, I don't really, you know, I don't really learn anything about you in this. And I don't usually say that. Again, what the question that I'll ask if students are doing this is, what do you learn about the author from this essay? And I'll just listen and actually write down. So let's say it was that grandfather essay, and we read the essay aloud, and again, I've totally learned a ton about the grandfather, but nothing about the student. I'll ask, so what do you learn about this person? And the author will go, the student that I'm working with will be like, yeah, not a lot. That he's got a cool grandfather. I'm like, yeah, that's about all I learned. And so that'll be really clearly show the author that, yeah, this isn't really me. So how do you avoid this problem, whether you're a student or helping somebody work through this process, is to make it personal. And by that I mean, you know, it is a personal statement after all. One exception to this, I'm just going to jump back in the presentation, is on that third idea, if it's you know, something on intelligence or kind of abstract, sometimes you'll have a supplemental essay that is actually asking for, you know, someone to dissect a particular, you know, abstract idea or an intellectual idea. You know, Stanford asks for, you know, what's an intellectual idea that's inspired you? You know, in that case, it's okay, I think, to get a little more abstract. But for the main personal statement, I want to find out about your life. I want to know about who you are, what's brought you here, what drives you, what your passions are. I want to learn about you. So, So that's something that's important to me. So while my student is you know, talking about the things that he or she likes, I'll make a pros and cons list, and I'll just bullet point the list. And then at the end, I'll be like, okay, is there anything else? And because I'm, you know, wanting to make sure that they've said everything. And you'll get to a point where they're like, no, I think that's it. And why I love doing this, and if you've worked with me before, here's like behind the scenes for why I'm doing this with you. Because it's a chance for me to gather more information. So if I just like read an essay silently and then I respond right away, like I've only got like 2 minutes to, and I've got like, you know, I'm reading the essay and then I have to respond right away. So it doesn't give me much time to like actually think about it. So I'm kind of getting into the second one. It gives me time to process my thoughts. But I'm also collecting more information about like, what does the student want to go? Like, where does the student want to go with this essay? So what do I mean by that? Well, like I was doing this yesterday with a student and I said, well, what do you like about it? And my student was like, well, it really feels like me. Like, it feels like my voice. And that was something that I hadn't noticed before. Like, when I read it, I was noticing more like technical stuff and I was noticing like the content. But when the student said it feels like me, I was like, oh my gosh, yes, that totally feels like you. And it's got like a great voice. And I said to the student later, you know, I was like, yes, I really think it sounds like you. And I hope that you keep that essence. So it's giving you a chance to like see how the author is thinking. Because ultimately, we're wanting to support that person in telling the story that he or she wants to tell, not the story that we think that person should tell, right? This is like a constant thing I'm having to remind myself that if I have some great idea, like ultimately it doesn't really matter unless it's in service of what that person's idea is. So I'm trying to find out more about that other person. Secondly, like I said, it's giving me more time to process my thoughts. If I just spend, you know, 2 or 3 minutes reading it silently and then have to give feedback right away, ooh, that's not a lot of time. So, but going through the process of reading it aloud, which takes a little bit more time than just reading it silently, because I read fast silently, and then actually having the student like tell me what they think of it, it gives me time to like to generate my feedback, you know? It's kind of like, you know, when someone asks you after a movie, like, what'd you think? And you're like, I don't know, it just ended. I haven't even had time to process it yet. So it gives you a little more time to process. It also, I think, I didn't write this in here, but I think it really empowers the author. Like, you know, imagine if you were doing this with somebody and you share something with them that's like kind of vulnerable and then the other person just starts criticizing it. Like, I want a chance to be like, well, here's what I think, first of all. And oftentimes, this is the third point, is most people know what's wrong with their essay. And so by saying it out loud, by having the person that I'm working with say, oh, I think that the ending is totally crappy and needs work, then I don't have to actually say that. I can actually just agree or disagree with what they're saying, you know. I can say, yeah, the ending does, you know, it does need work. And finally, I want the person who's, you know, who I'm working with to feel empowered and to feel like they're writing this essay. And they are, ultimately, they should be. And also, I'm inviting that person, and usually it's a student that I'm working with, to think more critically and to be able to analyze their own work, which I think is just an awesome skill in life and in college. So I'm doing it for that reason as well. Revising the first draft. So let's say you've got a first draft and you're like, well, how do I make it better? And this is for, you know, this goes for you revising your own draft, or it's a great technique to use with somebody else, with another student. Here are some like really specific things you can do. So let's assume that the person has come in with a first draft and they're like, what do you think? Well, again, I encourage, so, and one of the things that I rarely do is I rarely read the first draft before I meet with a student, because I don't actually need to. You know, some people want to do that and like come up with some ideas beforehand. I don't think that that's actually better. I mean, you can if you want. But if you do, if you have read the first draft that the person has sent you, I still recommend when you're meeting with somebody for the first time, when you're revising their draft, or even if it's the second or third time, actually I do this every time, is we still continue to read the draft aloud. So, in revising the first draft, the first thing I encourage you to do is to read it aloud so that you've got a chance to hear what the other person thinks about it, what the author thinks about it, okay? Then, when it comes to revising it, when it comes to making it better, how do we do that? Okay. First, ask yourself this really important question. Are we molding with the right clay? Okay. Again, back to the clay molding metaphor. If we're not molding with the right clay and we start getting into like fixing this draft that's like fundamentally not the right topic, we're just going to waste a lot of time. So we've got to step back and ask ourselves, is this the right topic? You know, do you really want to write about the trip to, you know, let's say the volleyball tournament? Like, is that really the sum total of who you are? You know, and particularly if you're working with one particular event and you're doing, like, the narrative structure, it better be a freaking life-changing moment. Like, it better be the thing that, like, transformed your life if you're writing about one thing. Because if it's not, if it's just something that's, like, you read it and you're like, eh, like, chances are that's not going to stand out in a pile of essays. So, you know, ask this question first. Is this the topic? And you can ask yourself this as you're helping somebody, but you can also ask the other person, like, does this feel like the thing that you want to be writing about? Sometimes you're going to totally know. You're going to read the essay, and it's going to be about that person. It's going to be their life story, and it's going to be a narrative, like, you know, that just, like, feels epic, and it's like, wow. And you don't even need to ask the question because you're just, like, blown away by everything that this person's been through. So you won't always need to ask this question. But if it feels like, it's kind of surface level, we haven't gotten to the depths yet, ask them or ask yourself, is this the right topic? If it's not the right topic, I say, go back to plan A. In other words, go back to brainstorming, go back to all these ideas, you know, go back to a potential outline, ask them, okay, well, what do you want to write about? I know that sounds like a really simple, stupid, basic question, but I ask it all the time. Like, okay, it's not the volleyball tournament essay. Like, what do you want to write about? Like, what feels fun? What's different? And then you can use all those other brainstorming ideas. And I want to make it clear that if somebody comes in with nothing, or if they feel like, oh, we're having to start over, I don't make another person feel bad for that. That I actually take that to be an exciting thing, because we get to like sacrifice the essay of yesterday to the essay of tomorrow. And I think that that's actually a good thing, because it means we evolved our thinking. So we've gotten that essay out of the way, or that topic. Okay, that's not going to be it. What's the new thing? So I encourage you to just step into that and like embrace that, whether you're writing or whether you're having, you know, helping somebody write. Just like, okay, well, it's not that, so let's go to something else. If you feel like this is the right topic and you feel like you've nailed it and like, okay, this is what I want to write about, it's just a matter of like how, because I'm not comfortable with my draft, or I feel like there's extra stuff, or I'm not sure how to fix it, here's one of my favorite ways to revise the draft. It goes like this, in 5 steps, all right? So, if you want, you can follow along and look at the first lines of each paragraph from the SAA on debate, or the SAB, the endodontics essay, which, again, you can just Google College Essay Guy on Debate, or SAA, or College Essay Guy SAB, and you'll find that essay. Or it's in the PDF, if you've got the PDF. So actually, if you're watching this pre-recorded, like, pause it and actually get those essays out for a second. So on SAB, for example, the endodontics essay, notice that first line. As a kid, I was always curious. you know, beginning of second paragraph, and it didn't stop in second grade. And then you read the first line of the third paragraph and keep going. What you'll notice is that all of those lines flow together in like a short version of the story. Now, this student didn't intend that, like didn't begin the essay with that. That didn't, you know, he didn't arrive at that until actually after the essay. It's something that I noticed at the end. But I realized this is a really cool way to try and outline an essay. So what do I mean by that? Like, how do you use this to write a better essay? Well, try this. Go through your essay, your rough draft, your first draft. And first of all, you need to split it into separate paragraphs if you've written just one large paragraph. But split it into separate paragraphs, separate sections, you know, what I call the big chunks of the essay. And then I want you to highlight the first lines of each paragraph in bold. You don't have to do this. You can, if you want, pause the video and do that right now. But you can also just do this later. But highlight the first lines of every paragraph in bold so you see what you're leading into each paragraph with. Then I want you to read these bolded lines aloud to yourself and ask yourself, do they flow together? Okay? And chances are they won't. Chances are it will not be clear in each of the paragraphs what, like, how that first sentence, like, sets that paragraph up. And again, if you're kind of like not sure what I mean by that, go back to example essay B, the endodontics essay, and notice how those first lines set up exactly what's going to be in that paragraph. And it creates this nice flow for it. So you're going to go back, put your first lines of each paragraph in bold, read just those lines aloud, just the bolded lines aloud to yourself. Do they flow together? Chances are, if it's a first draft, they're not going to flow together yet. But then write a new outline in which all the lines flow together. So one of the notes I made here is that the lines can be aspirational. In other words, when I have my students do this, I'll have them go back and think, okay, what would I like the first line of this paragraph to be? It's not what it is right now, but this is what I would like to be in this paragraph. And you might start off with something like what I call naming the DVD chapter, where it's like, well, I know in this paragraph I need to talk about the challenges that I faced moving to this country. But the next step, and the step that this exercise is asking you to do, is to actually go in and, rather than think about, okay, generally I need to talk about the challenges, like think about the first sentence in that paragraph, like how that would begin. So for example, just riffing off the top of my head, you know that sentence on coming to this country and facing challenges could be something as simple as like, but when I came to this country, it wasn't easy. You know, right? Or coming to this country from you know, Korea and having to acclimate to American culture took some time, period. And then what comes after in that paragraph is details describing images and describing the intricacies of what it was like acclimating to this country. But I've set myself up nicely with a one sentence in bold that clearly tells the reader what's going to be happening in that paragraph. What I'm asking you to do essentially is to write topic sentences, which I hate saying even because it's like, it makes me think of like English classes that I didn't like in high school. But if you think about it in this way, if you think about what am I trying to do in this section of my essay, it's a great way of specifying exactly what you want out of the paragraph. And like I said, when you read them all, and actually I'm jumping ahead of the next step, but the next step is to rewrite your paragraphs so that each paragraph expands upon the new bolded topic sentences. So let me say what I mean by that. So you've written all these lines, this new outline, and your lines now kind of flow together, and it's going to take some time. It may take you an hour, it may take you longer, so that all of your sentences, and you're going to have to let go of what you wrote, but all of your bolded first sentences are going to like flow together in a nicer way. Then you're going to rewrite for your second draft, you're going to rewrite your paragraphs so that they all fit underneath this new flow. And you're going to be like, but wait, I wrote this awesome first draft and I liked this part and I liked that part. You've got to let that go. So it's really important to do this from scratch when you're writing your second draft. Otherwise, I call this the Frankenstein. You're Frankensteining. You're trying to create this new thing out of old dead pieces. And this comes from a lot of experience of trying to rewrite stuff. I rewrite stuff again and again and again. Even this presentation is like again and again and again. You know, I rarely put out into the world like a first draft of something. Oftentimes, the first draft actually tells me what my outline is. You know what I'm saying? So we might write the first draft and be like, this is some of the story. I don't know. And then you go back and create the outline and you go, oh, this is what I'm trying to do in each of these. So you organize the pieces and then you got to let that first draft go. Because that first draft, the point of it was just to help you know what story you wanted to tell in what order, to help you organize it. So then once you've kind of done some the gardener stuff, right, where you just like, here's my essay, first draft, then you got to go back and be the architect and go, okay, I got to create, you know, outline 2.0, basically, right? This is another version of outline 2.0. I got to figure out exactly what I'm saying in each paragraph. And then now for the new draft, for my second draft, I'm going to go and try to, you know, and you can do this, you know, again and again and again. So it could be that you write the new draft and still you're not quite, you don't have the right bolded lines, or you're, you know, you've got them in the wrong order or something, you know, but basically going from the going to the process of articulating what you want each paragraph to do is, for me, one of the best ways of figuring out what you want to do in the next draft. After you do that, step away for at least 30 minutes, okay? So go for a walk so you can get some perspective on it, you know. And I say this after you've written the outline or after you've written a full new draft. Step away from it for a while and then come back and, again, read it aloud. Because I think, again, reading it aloud is the best way to hear your essay. You know, does it work? Does it not work? It's going to tell you so much. Okay, we're almost done for today. A quick note on how to receive feedback. So I've been talking to you a lot about, you know, how to give feedback and how to tell people, basically, you know, ways of telling people what to do and how to help them. But I just want to give you a note, if you're on the receiving end and someone else is telling you what to do and they're giving you advice, sometimes it can feel really good and sometimes it can feel really crappy and it can feel like they're trying to like run things for you. So I just want to say to you that it's your story, and if somebody says something to you that you don't like or you don't agree with, you don't have to do anything. Like, you can just listen and say, thank you, and just be really gracious. And if you feel like it's not useful, you don't even need to tell the person, that sucks, that's not useful. You can just go, you know, you can just thank the person and say, now you can definitely, if someone gives you something that's not useful, say, you know, I don't think that's going to work for me. That could be useful feedback for the person. But I just want you to know, and I just want you really to remind you that anything anyone says to you, any 2 cents that they're giving you is just that, it's 2 cents. It's worth whatever you want it to be. So just be gracious and remember that, in the words of Cicero, nobody can give you wiser advice than yourself. So you're running this process, okay? So run the process. Here's your homework. You're to meet with your writing partner to discuss your next essay draft. If that's me, you're meeting with me. If you're meeting with somebody else, make sure you've got a session set up. I think an hour session is good for these early sessions. If you're helping each other, make sure you decide if you'll do either 1 2-hour session, like back to back, like I help you and then we take a 5-minute break and then we switch. Or if you're going to do 2 separate 1-hour sessions, which I kind of recommend, because oftentimes after that first 1-hour session, the other person wants to go and like work on stuff and write. Or, you know, you're just tired because you've been like working on writing. So I recommend splitting that up. It could be in the same day, totally, but, you know, just having a break in between can be useful. And at the end of the session, I want you to set action items and a deadline for the next draft. So specifically answer the question, what will you send? What will you send me and by when? And then, like I said, write an email, you know, you pull out your smartphone and just send an email right away with that clear deadline and the clear thing that's going to be sent. So that's your homework. So this officially ends session 3. Session 4 is coming up. I'm super excited. And happy draft revising and working together.